What's going on, guys, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Let's Just Talk podcast. I can't wait to dive headfirst into this one because if you know me for any length of time, you know I love fast cars, you know I love motorsport, and with the explosion of the TV series or Netflix series Drive to Survive, the world has gone Formula One mad and motorsport mad. And me living in Australia, we've just had the Albert Park Australian Formula One Grand Prix as well. And so I'm super excited to be talking to someone in the motorsport world. Andre, I really appreciate your time, mate, and thanks for joining the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I think most people will probably hear an accent straight away. And so I'm always, most of the guests I kind of have on this show are kind of local and around us, but we're working on a big time difference today. Tell us, tell everyone on the other end of the earphones, where are you coming in from at the moment?
Currently in New Jersey and the States.
And originally, I'm told that you're a Haitian American. Is that correct?
Yes. My dad and his side of the family are from Haiti.
And I mean, do you know much from that side, or were you kind of brought up in the States proper? I don't know if that's kind of correct in saying, but kind of like mainland kind of United States and kind of the relationship there, but kind of how long or how much have you known of the Haitian kind of country yourself?
So I've known of, I've always lived in the States, but my dad's side of the family always made sure I was kind of brought up knowing of it, and they always fed me information on it. And my grandfather on my dad's side was very much a player in Haitian politics. So I also was introduced to a fair bit on the political side.
I've always, I mean, again, this is just my naivety to kind of how the world runs. I mean, we're a little kind of country down in the middle of nowhere, us Australians. And so, I mean, I don't tend to...
Not a little country.
Big land mass, but I guess little by numbers in that is. But the kind of political system and kind of how it all works, I mean, there's a lot of, I guess, in quote, territories of the states, like, you know, Puerto Rico and those kind of countries. Is Haiti one of those as well? Like, I mean, is it kind of a territory of the states? Does it have a relation, or is it not related to it in any way, shape, or form?
So it's not a territory or anything. It's its own country, technically. It's okay. Just a bit messy at the moment.
Politically or kind of world scale kind of things?
Politically, however you want to say it, it's in a bit of a messy situation.
Yeah, okay. Well, tell us a little bit, I guess, about your upgrowing and, I guess, getting into the world of motorsport, and we'll obviously talk about kind of what you're doing now. And we're talking off air just before. You're in a bit of kind of pre-season kind of at the moment. But looking through, you know, some of your records of recent, you know, winning a pretty big race in the UK as well. And so we'll obviously get into all of that. But, I mean, how does one start in the motorsport world? I mean, myself, I've always had posters on the wall of cars, and I've always been fascinated by cars and motorsport, and I can remember watching many different motorsport races in Australia and obviously around the world with Formula One and things like that. But I mean, the thought of going any further than just watching it certainly never entered my mind. So I mean, how does it kind of go from, you know, something you might obviously loved yourself as well, to kind of getting into the world of actual motorsport and going down that pathway?
So it was kind of just a big snowball effect, to be honest. Like, there's an indoor electric go-karting place near us. And one week after school, my dad's like, oh yeah, I'll take my son there. It seems like something he'd enjoy. So I did that. And I'm like, oh, this is, and it just felt right from the start. I was just like, oh, I understand this. This feels good. And that was, I think I was maybe 10 or so, maybe a little younger, a little older. I'm not too sure off the top of my head. And just did that for a couple of years. They had a little summer camp there with like actual driver instruction and stuff. And I got to be really, really competent with it, to the point where, you know, very short at the time, me, they just kind of put a booster seat and pedal extensions into one of the full size carts, one of the adult ones. And I was like, yeah, let them have at it. Which was, it was pretty funny. I could barely see over the steering wheel. And I was like, I think I might have set like the lap record at the time. They're like, oh, okay. I mean, obviously I had a little bit of a weight advantage because I was about 2 foot tall, but but I felt pretty good with it. And then went to do outdoor stuff in the local state championships, running 125cc two-stroke carts. Those were a lot of fun and definitely a pretty steep learning curve for those because there's no way you really prepare for them. You just kind of go do that. And did 3 years of that, did some national races at the end, then raced with a, did a test with a team in the Southern US to move into cars in a Formula 1600 car, if you're familiar.
Now, what kind of cars are you looking at on those?
So it's a, you can think of it kind of like a very baby F1 car. Mm-hmm. They don't have any wings, so there's no downforce, and it's a smaller engine, smaller chassis, and it's around 120, 130 horsepower, but they're only 500 kilos with driver.
Mm. Are they open wheel type cars as well?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes. So did a test in one of those in a track called Roebling Road. Interesting track. And a test went well. The team wanted me to drive for them. Like, oh yeah, that sounds great. We were trying to get that in order and figure that out. And then someone who had tested with them a couple weeks or a month before we did kind of swooped in and bought the seat out from under us. And it's kind of like, oh, well, what do we do now? And the team boss basically told us or put us in contact with a team in the UK that, and just recommended us to them and said, you know, for your career, we think this is your next best step. We advise you to pursue that. And that left me and my dad very excited, but also scratching our head a little, like, okay, where am I going to live over there? How do I get an FIA license to actually race over there? And yeah, that's kind of where it all really took off.
I guess when you ever hear any stories from anyone who's made it anywhere in the world of motorsport, be it Formula One, touring cars, or any thought, as I said, any kind of championship around the world, I guess sponsorship, money, and you talked about kind of buying that seat and kind of swooping in underneath you, and kind of, I presume, for lack of a better word, there's a lot of politics around kind of who gets seats and who knows this person. And obviously you got recommended after having a good, you know, drive or a kind of good, I guess, a showing with that team, and they recommend you over there. I mean, how much of that world is just a, what's the word I'm kind of looking for? Almost kind of like an inner circle of a, if you're inside us, you're kind of one of us. If you're outside of us, good luck kind of thing. Is it kind of like that? Or did you feel kind of welcomed, even though you were kind of, I guess, a newcomer to it when you started kind of going down that route of kind of stepping into kind of open wheelers and going beyond karts?
To be honest, I did feel pretty welcomed. Both of the teams were fantastic, and there was a really good environment to be in. But from outside the motorsports world, looking in, it can be a bit difficult to bridge that gap without having your name known much or having like a foot in the door, so to speak.
And I guess, again, the money side of things like that, how much of it comes down to you, the person, and whoever you've got behind you, whether that's parents or, you know, a sponsorship that you've kind of come across through coming up through ranks other ways, or outside forces coming to you saying, hey, we'd like to sponsor you. How much of it kind of comes down to that dollar? Like, the teams have money that they can kind of just throw around because they have their own sponsors and they say, hey, you just want that driver, we want that driver. Or is it down to the driver to actually kind of come in and say, I can kind of help support this, and that's why you should bring me on, as well as I'm a good driver?
Yeah, honestly, it's almost always down to the driver and who he has with him. Sometimes the teams will be willing to cut you a little bit of a deal, like lop a bit of percent off if you're a very proven driver and they know what you're capable of, and it's just a good idea to have you. But Yeah, a lot of the times it is down to the driver, sponsors, partners, which is currently at the stage we're at.
And it is a matter of, like you said, you're kind of in like pre-season. You were talking about from now kind of prepping up for another season. Is it a matter of kind of timelines in that we're going racing on this day and we need X amount of money to be able to get the car to the start line to do some testing, to get all of the tires and the engines and the chassis and all that kind of going? Is it kind of like, shit, we better get some money to go, hopefully this one will work out, this, and if it doesn't, is it then just all scrapped? Like, how does it kind of work as you said leading into a season?
So currently definitely a bit of that going on, timelines, following up with people we've reached out to, trying to see if there's anyone else who might be interested in getting some more advertising on board, which is, motorsports is mainly good advertising for a sponsor, because, you know, you get, well, it depends a lot on the series, but I can go into that later because that's a bit of a rabbit hole. But yeah, mainly just reaching out to people, following up, keeping the communication lines going and seeing where everyone's at.
That's always kind of something that's, I want to ask you, being, can you tell me, if you don't mind sharing, like, your age? You look quite young to me. I'm an old guy these days, but
yeah, I'm 20 years old.
20. So, when I started my business, when I was going through university and, you know, studying to become an exercise physiologist, which was kind of what I always wanted to do, and ended up doing, and obviously having a career in business in, what was never taught to me throughout that was, well, how to actually run an exercise physiology business. And so it was always getting us ready to be an exercise physiologist. But then I got out into the world and I had no intention over working for someone. I always wanted to run my own business. Always wanted to have my own show. And I kind of had to learn on the fly. Now, was that kind of something similar for yourself, in that all you've probably wanted to do, or you clearly had, you know, a skill set there that kind of lended you to be a good driver, and like, okay, I need to be a good driver. I'm a great driver. Let's improve my driving. I'll get stronger. I'll get faster. I'll get, you know, better with my reactions and all those things that kind of make you a good driver. But then you're kind of thrown in this world as, oh, hang on, I need sponsorship. I need this. And that there's a business behind it all. Is that, again, kind of part that you have had to play a heavy role and kind of learn really quickly in, or have you had people around you, be it dad or other people that dad might know, that have been able to help you on that journey? Kind of, as I said, learning the business of being a driver.
So honestly, I just kind of got thrown into it, in all honesty. So I had to pick it up relatively quickly, but I have had a fair bit of help in that regard. Funnily enough, my physical trainer, a guy named Simon Hayes. He works as like a motorsports specific physical trainer. And he reached out to me a year or two ago, and we started working together since then. And he's been able to help me a bit with learning that business side, making connections, introducing me to people. Because in motorsports, it's a lot more of who you know than I think in some other areas. There are so many people to know, and a lot of big names, and a lot of drivers who are coming up through the ranks currently. I have pre-existing connections. It's a motorsports family, or a very, very wealthy family. And I'm kind of not quite either of those. So it's a bit more difficult to get your foot in the door. But it's a learning process all the same. No, it's okay. Sorry. It's a learning process all the same. So just trying to learn as much as I can day in, day out.
And I guess the series that you're in this year, tell us more about, the move over to the UK. Because, were you around, 18, 19, 20? Is that kind of when you had to make the move? Was that kind of the age?
Yeah, I was 18 at the time.
So, you've just been told by this one company that you thought you maybe going to be racing in, and they say, sorry, someone else has got the seat, but there's an opportunity over in the UK. Like, I know you said, I'm excited, but also, shit, where am I going to live? How's this going to work? You know, how is school, if I'm going to still be at school, and all these different kinds of things. Like, how did that kind of whole process go? And was it just a matter of, well, this is what I want to do, so let's just go and make it work? Or was there I don't know if this is really the right thing? Was it ever a question in your mind?
It was honestly never really a question. It was just like, all right, let's make it work. Let's make it happen. But the process of doing so was definitely a bit of a roller coaster. So we had to first get an actual license so I could even drive over there. And keep in mind, like, I'm fresh out of karts. I had maybe 2 days in testing in the formula car, and that was about it. Like, I even showed up to that test, like, still wearing all my karting gear and like the wrong suit, the wrong gloves, and like, they wouldn't let you race in this, but for testing it'll be okay. And so then to get that license, we need to do two, I think, nationally sanctioned races or race weekends. And we found a team in Spec Miata or Spec MX-5, which is just a race prep version of the Miata MX-5 road car.
And for Australians, that's the Mazda MX-5. We call them a Mazda. I know you guys have it as a Miata over there, but yeah,
okay.
Just to get anyone's kind of querying.
Got it. Yeah, so showed up to the track, which was a whole process of itself. The second weekend we did it, the airport didn't even have a rental car for us. They were like completely sold out because this was during COVID. So we were about 5 minutes away from getting a U-Haul truck to drive to and from the track for the weekend. But someone came through and helped us out. When I first got in the car or showed up to the track, the team boss was like, all right, have you raced cars before? No. All right, have you been to this track before? No. Have you driven one of these cars before? No. Have you even driven stick before? No. It's just like, this is all like the night before testing for a national race round. It's like, all right, it's a lot. And he's like, all right, yeah, just go drive around the pits. So I drove around the pits, rolling it through the gears. And he's like, all right, you're good. You're good for track tomorrow. So first time really driving stick and learning that was on a racetrack.
And in the UK, does that mean it's on the opposite side as well? Or like, are you driving on the opposite side, like as in where the stick is, or was it kind of set up as a US kind of setup?
So this was in the, when I was driving the spec for the Mazda Miata, that was in the US.
Ah, okay. Yep.
And after that, went to the UK to drive the Formula Ford, which I do know you have a lot of in Australia, which seems pretty cool.
I was going to say, from how does it kind of step from, you as said, being in essentially what is a road going car that they've turned into a bit of a track kind of car? I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking, like, as you said, you're going for a license. Like, I'm just thinking about when I went for my driver's license for the roads. Like, okay, we're going to do here. You're going to do a 3-point turn, learn how to park, you know, all of these different things to let me just, and said, essentially be a driver on our road. Like, is it as deep? I mean, it doesn't sound so, but please tell me if I'm correct, but it doesn't sound as detailed as like, oh, you can go around the track. You look safe. Yep. Here's your license and off you go. Was it kind of that simple, or there was a bit more kind of involved in it?
So it's actually almost that simple, as surprising as it may sound to some listeners, but you basically just go around the track, kind of show all the marshals and safety officials who are watching that you are a racing driver, like you have the ability and you're not a hazard to anyone. Mm-hmm. And they sign off on your license and get a couple more signatures and you're good to go.
And was the series that you were recommended to over in the UK, was that directly into Formula Ford, or was it a different series that then you progressed into Formula Ford? How'd that kind of setup go in the UK?
So that was directly into Formula Ford, and it's a pretty big series. It's one of the bigger UK national series. It's run by the BRSCC, which is like the British sanctioning body for some motorsports, along with, I think it's called MSUK. But it's a big series. At a couple of the rounds, they had like 30 plus cars on the track at the same time. So it's really competitive, and it's so much fun.
What kind of appeals in regards to, I mean, your eyes almost lit up on the screen for anyone who's only, as I said, listening in. But I mean, what's so appealing about kind of the Formula Ford car itself to you that did you know anything about them before kind of stepping into one? Or was it when you got into it, it was then, Jesus, this is real fun. This has got, you know, a lot of punch for its kind of little car, and it's got a lot of grip, and I presume a lot of downforce as well that's kind of working on the car.
So I had done as much research on it as possible to be prepared for when I got there. But once you're in the car, it's very different. It's, you know, like the very famous Mike Tyson quote, everyone has a plan until they get hit in the face. And it's very different to what you referenced to earlier, a road car turned race car to a purpose-built race car. It just feels much more at home on the track. Like everything works kind of as you'd expect. And there's no real downforce, so it's all the mechanical grip.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the tires and the combination of everything, to be those cars are just naturally very, very on edge. Like you're never really, your steering wheel is almost never in the same position for more than like a half second. You're constantly making micro adjustments. The car is rotating. You're really having to kind of fight to keep it where you want it.
I want to nerd out a little bit on the car
stuff
because, again, people listening in, I don't know if people have an interest in it or whatnot, but I certainly do. And so I want to kind of nerd out a little bit on it there. And you spoke a bit about kind of mechanical grip. And, you know, I've been following Formula One on and off for many years, but I've definitely got heavy into it probably over the last 5 or 6 years. And I've certainly seen a big change into kind of how the, I mean, the cars change dramatically almost every year, but like, especially in the last few years, there's just so much downforce on the cars and, you know, becoming, you know, cars that almost, you were talking about mechanical grip and I guess tires having such a massive role in kind of the wheels, the tires, having that contact with the ground and kind of really being a driving force to where you get that grip from rotating on those tires. But now some of the guys in F1 are kind of almost driving on the actual grip of the wing and the different, you know, different fenders and different things like that. And again, I'm only talking from a very novice kind of point of view, but it looks like people like a Danny Ricciardo who have really struggled in the kind of new kind of setup of the car, whereas in 6-7 years ago when the cars were very different and not as kind of extreme on the downforce that they are these days, he did far better in those kinds of cars. Is that kind of where you think all kind of racing is going to, or is it kind of limited to, I guess, that extreme end where they've got the money and ability to kind of create those kind of cars that they do in F1?
So honestly, a lot of it is also just regulations. Because back then they were a bit more limited on how much downforce they could have, and the tires were also a lot smaller. As you get more downforce and you get a larger contact patch with bigger tires, the car will inherently just get more and more stable, as well as they're just much heavier now. Whereas like the Formula Ford, it runs on a relatively narrow racing tire, which is a cut slick, so not a full slick, so it mm-hmm. behaves a little differently and lends itself a little more to, I don't want to say nervous in a negative way behavior, but it moves around more and you can kind of point it a little more easily. And again, no downforce, it's all mechanical grip. So a lot of F1 cars rely very, very, very heavily on aero, as well as most, if not all, cars with like an aero platform. For everyone who watches F1, if you see an F1 car and has some front wing damage, they're immediately at the back. Like there's not a whole lot you can do in that situation because they need that aero platform so much.
So does that, I mean, with what you're doing in Formula Ford, I'd just kind of love you to share if you have been, I mean, I don't know, do karts have much aero to them whatsoever, or are they basically just four wheels stuck on the ground to a zippy engine behind it?
not really much, if any, aero. Like the body work does a little bit. Sometimes if you're on like a fast track with a big straightaway, you'll see some drivers ducking behind the steering wheel to get a little more aerodynamic. But apart from that, nothing really.
Have you been in cars or tested cars or driven cars that have, whether it's even a wing or some sort of diffuser or some sort of undercarriage that kind of helps with downforce at all? And I ask that question purely just like how difficult would it be? And I'm going to kind of then go to the novice route, but I'd love to ask you, being a driver, like to step in to a car that is heavily aeroed and kind of that kind of platform, aside from what you do, as you said, talking much more just the grip of the actual car mechanically and with the tires, like how easy is it to for you to just step out of Formula Ford and go, well, I've got this opportunity to go and test drive in a Formula One today. Maybe that's a big extreme, but like kind of going from one or one to the other, how difficult is that for you to kind of get a handle of that? And would it only take a couple of laps and you start getting the kind of groove of it, or is it just so vastly different that it really does take a lot of time to kind of get used to it?
So I actually do have an opportunity to test and potentially race a slicks and wings car at some point this year, which is kind of what we're gearing up for. And I think it really depends on the driver. I haven't driven one yet, so I can't say much for sure, but some of the driver coaches I've worked with over in the UK, they said that my driving style would work well in a slicks and wings car. And there are some drivers who get in one and it makes sense to them pretty quickly. And there are others where maybe it takes them a season or two to really adapt to it and get the most out of it. And yeah, there's not really a concrete answer so much. It's varies person to person.
I mean, I've been very lucky enough, and I've shared again through my platform, very lucky enough to drive a couple of supercars in my life. Ferrari
Nice.
488, Lamborghini Huracan, been in a GTR, AMG, Mercedes, and especially the GTR with a huge wing that it has on the back of it, big front splitter, big diffuser. That again, especially now, we were on public roads, and I can't for legal reasons tell you the kind of speeds we were doing, but we were all perfectly legal speeds.
Yeah.
But
Just
the
five
number,
over, just five over.
absolutely, just five. The number one thing I gathered from driving my everyday car, then stepping instantly into these 600-700 horsepower type supercars with, you know, as I said, the technology behind that allows that to do is just, you said it yourself that the car just felt, when you were saying before, the car was just a bit nervy, not in a bad way, but like it's kind of was very twitchy, but kind of very directional, and kind of any input that you give it's there and it's direct and it's kind of doing its job. Now, again, supercars aren't race cars, but they're, you know, as close as you can be on kind of, I guess, on a
Yeah.
daily road kind of thing. The number one thing I got from it was just confidence in that if I was to take my family car and try and do, not that I did these speeds, if I try and did 150 to 200 kilometers an hour on a road, it would feel flighty. It would feel, I'd be nervous. Are these brakes actually going to slow me down? Whereas there was never a hesitation in those supercars I got to drive. They were bulletproof. I felt very confident jumping on those brakes, jumping on that accelerator, that it'll drive me through the corner, pull me out, slow me down, and all those kind of things. I say again, all of that to say, is that, again, I hear commentators say it all the time, is it that driver doesn't look comfortable in that car, or, you know, he does look comfortable in that car? Is that the same kind of thing? Is it when you get into a car, you just want to have that absolute confidence that this car is going to do exactly what you want it to do? And is that what comes with having like a purpose-built race car?
Yeah, that's always the ideal, to have that confidence and that faith that you know if you're braking as late as you can, throwing the car in and trying to keep that minimum speed as high as you can, having that confidence that the car's going to stick, that's the ideal every time.
And for, I guess, people again who might never get an opportunity to race cars, being a car going kind of silly speeds around a racetrack, what's the one thing that, you know, in a car itself that most people maybe I guess, neglect that actually plays a much larger role in kind of having that confidence in a car?
Just, that's a really good question. I've never had that question before. I'd say some of it could be like where you are mentally. I would say that, because if you're in a space mentally where you can react well and be able to anticipate what it's going to do, even if it's not ideal, then you're going to be much better off and just say, oh, it does this, and leave it at that.
Hmm. The big thing that I kind of led that question in, that what I want to kind of go to, is when I've been to the Formula One, or especially when you see it live, or any kind of racing that I've been to over the years, is that when you see it live, fast cars are fast cars. And it's not to kind of take away from the fact that when you see a car go past you at 300 kilometers an hour, that's really fast. But the biggest thing that kind of always stands out to me is the braking capability of cars, especially on open wheelers and very light cars that have big brakes that can really kind of grip them and slow them down. Obviously, then if they're running slick tires as well, that kind of grip that comes from those as well, is that, you know, if you and I are in a car, again, we haven't ever done this, but if we're doing this on a road and coming from 200 plus kilometers an hour, I mean, you're using hundreds of meters to kind of slow you down, or kind of if you've got a corner coming up. Whereas, you know, again, talking about F1 again, F1 doing 300 kilometers an hour, coming into a 90 degree corner, which is a slow corner, and 150 meters out, just standing on that brake and kind of knowing that this thing will just do, 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 and kind of slow them up. It's the thing that always shocked me when I, even seeing it again now, even though I've seen multiple races in my life, it always is the thing that shocks me. And I think it's the thing that scares people most, when you kind of see the everyday person jumping into, you know, if they get to have a drive in a touring car and they're a passenger from it, it's not usually the speed that kind of scares most people. It's like, are you going to slow down? There's a corner, like brake. And it's that kind of late braking. And is that something that's hard to get used to from, I mean, I guess you've been around car racing all your life, but I can only imagine if you've got to drive to the track and you're just kind of driving in your normal car, that brake pedal must just feel so different. And then to try and get on track, like your brain is yelling at you, slow down, slow down, slow down. And yet, you know, no, I'm all right. I've still got 50 meters, 100 meters, whatever it might be, for actual kind of that braking point.
Oh yeah. Like when I drive my road car, which for reference is a pretty big boat of a sedan, it still has drum brakes on the rear, which aren't the greatest. And I'm so, my mind is still so wired just for a track car, open wheel, like when you're on track, braking as late as possible and having like a very high brake pressure. Whereas when I get in the road car, I'm like, stopping. All right, we stopped. Feels like everything takes an eternity.
Mm. And I guess let's talk a little bit about, you know, some success you had with Formula Ford. Like, again, anyone who knows motorsport will probably have heard of the Formula Ford series. As you said, we've definitely got quite a bit of it here. It's a very popular and kind of well-known one, alongside, you know, some of our bigger series like the V8 supercars that we have over here. And obviously, we've had some success with Australians in F1 over the years, Mark Webbers, the Danny Ricciardos, and obviously we've got Oscar now taking Danny's seat. Formula Ford for you, obviously you were straight into that at a very young age. You had some success. You got a win. That's massive. And so a massive congratulations to you there.
Thank you.
How many races was it before you kind of got that win? But did you ever think that, you know, in such a short time that you'd be kind of really competing up the front there and kind of making those kind of moves?
So I did think that within the time period I had in there, I would be competing at the front and fighting for podiums, but it took a little bit to get there. When I first came over, like, I missed all of preseason testing, which really shot myself in the foot with, just because it was such a last minute thing to actually go over to the UK and get the FIA license, that when I got there, we had time for about 2 days of testing in the car and then straight off to the national round. So, which was a bit of just like, all right, figure it out. Here you go. But the first weekend was a bit challenging, just kind of not doing anything dumb, just getting used to the car, still feeling it out, treating it like testing almost. I think I don't remember where I was. It was like almost top 10, which I was kind of frustrated by, like, it was a decent enough result for how much experience I have. But what if it was just that bit better? It would have been cooler. And then got to the top 10 in my second weekend, which was in the rain, which was pretty fun. I like racing in the rain. And then just kind of progressed steadily as the season went on, and then came back for a full year last year. And that's where it kind of kicked off.
And the series, how many races in a year?
So I think there were, don't quote me on this, but 6 or 7 rounds. And each round you have 2 or 3 races. The first 2 rounds had 2 races in a weekend. All the rest of them had 3 race rounds. And then there was another series that we raced in a couple times, which has 2 races a weekend. And we did that twice.
And I guess moving forward, you said you're in preseason kind of thing now. Have the team themselves given you kind of the, tug on the shoulder saying, you're doing really well, just keep doing what you're doing, progressing, and you're always going to have a seat with us? Or do you always kind of feel that pressure of, I better keep turning up here, else I could lose my seat tomorrow, kind of thing?
No, once you kind of have a seat locked in for the season, there isn't really going to be a team that's going to say your results aren't there, you're going to, like, you're gone, we're replacing you, because that's a bit unprofessional and a bit unkind to a driver who may not be adapting as quickly. Mm-hmm. And the team I was with, it was a very, very positive environment. So there was never really a concern for that happening. And I don't think many, if any, teams would do that nowadays.
And your time in the UK, is that where you want to continue? Kind of, can you see the progressions over there, or is it to, use this Formula 4 that you are in now, maybe get some more wins under your belt? It'd be great if you get a full championship maybe in the next couple of years, or maybe that's a goal for this year. I mean, let me know either way, but kind of where's the progression moving from here? And, like, ideally, how would you like to see the next kind of 4, 5, 6 years play out for you?
So end goal is IndyCar currently. And looking this year, I'm looking at coming back to the States and racing on the what was called the Road to Indy series and is now called the USF Pro Series, but it's the same series. And it's a couple different feeder series for IndyCar, which is a good opportunity. Have been talking to a few teams about that, so looking to make a debut in that sometime this year.
And is that what you were kind of alluding to before, saying Slicks and Wings or something you were saying?
Yeah, Slicks and Wings.
Yeah, and I mean, again, that must be pretty exciting for you. I mean, I presume that's a big step up in horsepower, ability of the car and everything like that from kind of what you're doing into there. Is that something, as I said, that excites you? Are you nervous about it? A little bit from column A, a little bit from column B. How are you kind of feeling about that playing out this year?
Mostly excited, because new opportunity and just looks like a great experience, but definitely a little nervous because it still is unknown. I haven't driven one. So it's kind of like, is how I've been preparing, is that going to work? Is it not going to work? Am I doing enough every day? How's it going to translate? Am I prepared? So it's definitely a bit of nervousness, but it's mostly excitement at, you know, the opportunity.
And you said ultimate goal, obviously getting into Indy. Now, I'm just going to sound like a dumb Australian again, and so please bear with me on that.
No worries.
I've watched quite a bit of Indy myself as well. I kind of enjoyed the aspect of, I mean, again, the criticism always is you guys just turn left and go around in a circle all day. So, I mean, how difficult can it really be? But I remember hearing an interview. I can't remember who the guy was, but I know when Will Power was in the Indy series, obviously another Aussie that went over there, whenever there's an Aussie in something around the world, you know, our ears prick up a little bit higher, kind of, oh, we got an Aussie doing it. How are they kind of doing? So it's kind of when I just got into it a bit there. I remember hearing kind of conversations that he was having and kind of listening to him on commentary or whatever it might be. And yeah, you know, it's a little bit more than just going around in a circle and turning left from there. Yeah. But the cars themselves, can you kind of just give me a bit more information, I guess, how they kind of differ from a Formula One in that obviously they're set up very differently. They are a different series, but to the outside looking in, they kind of look quite similar, but are they, or are they very different cars once you kind of get into the nuts and bolts of it?
They are pretty different cars. And funnily enough, in Indy, they're mostly road courses now, similar to F1. They have a couple oval course rounds, but those are becoming the minority.
Right. Okay.
And they are pretty different cars. The Indy cars they're all a spec chassis. So everyone runs the same exact chassis with the same exact aero parts. Whereas F1, it's kind of open make, do whatever you want as long as it's within that rule book. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's not spec on the IndyCar, the dampers, but that's it.
Yeah, right. Okay.
They have a fair bit fewer electronics. They don't have power steering like F1 does. Some of the driver aids and electronically adjustable systems on the IndyCar are a bit less sophisticated, or they don't quite have them. But yeah, if you look at F1, they have so many different settings they can play with, like different settings for the differential, brake bias migration, a whole bunch of stuff like that. Some of the Indy cars don't quite have those, but they don't really need them at this point, so to speak.
How technical do you have to be beyond just being able to drive the car? Like, it almost seems like drivers have to be engineers almost of themselves these days, because I guess hearing an engineer talk to you and kind of feed back to you, hey, Andre, we're looking at kind of you today and you're leaning on the brakes a bit too much here and you're not doing this here, and that's then loading up this. This is going to wear the gearbox out. And if I'm a driver, I'm sitting there going, you're talking a different language to me. I have no idea what you're talking. Like, do you have to understand that a lot to actually, and does it make you a better driver if you do? And then I'll flip that question and go, can you get by with just like, don't talk to me, just let me go out there and drive. You make the car drive quick and I'll go and make it drive quick on track.
Yeah, having a better understanding for the car, I believe, is very, very helpful. It's helped me. Like, I like to, in between races, I like to spend a lot of time with the team to learn more. And just the spending time with the team is always just a good place to be. It's always good people. But yeah, if you're a driver that, you know, you pull in, they're like, all right, how's the car? And you say good and nothing else, they're going to hate you for it. It's like, all right, turn three, your minimum speed is good, but you're losing a little bit on the apex. Why do you think that is? And it's like, well, I think like corner entry and mid corner, the car feels really good, but when I go to get on throttle, it starts to pick up the front end and understeer out a little wide, so I'm not able to exit quite like I want to. Then it's like, okay, we can do a couple changes for that. We can make it stiffer in the rear. We can make it softer in the front. Or if it's an aero car, we can change the aero load, add more front wing, add less rear. So you kind of have to be able to convey what you're feeling to what changes they're contemplating.
And the other kind of thing that comes to mind with regards to racing itself is that obviously it's a dangerous sport. There's high speeds, there's high you know, the whole high risk, high reward type kind of outcomes. Have you yourself in any kind of form of racing that you've done over the years had an accident? And if so, or if not, how much does that kind of play on your mind? Or is that something that can seriously limit your ability to drive well if you kind of, there's even a niggle in the back of the mind of like, geez, if this goes off, I'm in big trouble here.
So yeah, I have had a few, and most of the majority of them were, had a couple in karting that weren't great, had a couple in Formula Four that weren't great either. It's just, it's something that happens. Like if you're pushing that hard and most of the time you're inches away from the car next to you, or you're sometimes pushing them forward, it's bound to happen at some point or another. It just always sucks when it does. But to be a good driver, you kind of have to accept that risk. And when something like that happens, just look back, analyze it, understand why it happened, so you can keep that lesson for next time, and then get it out of your head and move on. It's a lot easier said than done, but that's basically what you need to do.
No, I mean, that's a really valid point. And I guess that kind of lends back into, I guess, the, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but the ordinary listener listening in that, you know, they might have no concept of what it is to race a car, but I think everyone has that concept of risk versus reward. And, you know, whether I go to push to maybe start a new career or like leave my job and start a business, there's those risks, those inherent risks that kind of come with anything. And I think you have to kind of accept that life itself has those risks in it, that shit can go wrong and more often than not will go wrong along the road. But if you can kind of have some sort of mindset like you just shared there and said, look, easier said than done, especially when you're plowing into a wall at 200 kilometers an hour and then you get it and hopefully you get out of that car safe, you know, you're probably going to still have that thought of shit, that was pretty lucky. And the next time you're in a car, I dare say it's not just an off switch. You go, oh, move on to the next race. It's probably still lingering. It takes some time to kind of get over it. But the same thing, kind of sharing that lesson to others, that you do crash and burn, or you have a big, in quote, accident in life, whatever that might be, that you know, you use it as some sort of learning platform rather than just something that is a, well, I'm out, I quit, I'm never doing that again because I don't want to ever fail again, or I don't ever want to crash again.
Yeah, it's just like, it's a risk you have to accept. Like once you accept it, it's just like, all right, it happened, learn from it, move on.
Absolutely. Well,
I was going to say, to be honest, on that note, I'm like much more nervous when I drive my road car than I am on the track, because I live in New Jersey and the drivers here are like a very, renowned for being subpar, shall we say. I'm like, okay, is this person gonna, do they know I'm here? They know I'm here. And I get so much more nervous about that than if I'm on track.
It's interesting you bring that up in that I drive a Vespa just to kind of zip around town. And people always ask me, you know, aren't you scared that you're going to get hit or kind of knocked off? And I mean, the consequences, obviously getting bumped or knocked on a little Vespa are far worse than getting a knock in a car. But I always say that I've been lucky enough to travel to some of the Southeast Asian countries, and in Thailand especially, it's manic on the roads there. However, I've always felt more safe on the road in Thailand than I ever did on the roads here, because people just live in their own headspace on the kind of roads in and around Australia. It's like, I'm going to work, I'm doing this, I'm on my phone, or I'm talking to the kids or whatever, and it's kind of all over the place. And I just kind of consider the Southeast Asian countries, especially, as I said, Thailand I've been to, it's kind of like an organized chaos. And I kind of think that that's what kind of racing cars is as well. It's chaos out there. It's fast, it's brutal, it's on the edge, but there's an organization to it that flows, and people, you know, the guy in front of you isn't just going to all of a sudden brake at the 200 meter mark when the braking point is at 150. So you kind of both accept that, you know that, and that's kind of what's going to happen. And I found that the same over in there. So it's interesting that you kind of, you say that, as I said, that you feel kind of safer out on the road doing 200, out on the racetrack doing 200 plus kilometers an hour than you do just in your everyday car going to the shops from there.
Oh yeah, it's like you can actually put a bit of trust in the other drivers, and because you know, like they're almost always there for the same reason you are. It's like, all right, they know what they're doing, and you don't have to drive in some crazy way. Whereas on the road, it's like you have to assume no one knows you exist.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I guess to kind of end on a note that can hopefully bring some value to those listening in. I know I don't have many very young listeners in here, but I know I've got lots of parents here that have likely got kids listening in. And so let's just say there's a mother or a father here listening, and it's like little Johnny or little Susie seems to have an acumen to kind of driving cars or is really interested in that. Where's the kind of best place to start to kind of, I guess, foster that love for cars that may become, a career down in the future?
Don't. No, I jest. I feel like it depends on maybe what their end goal is or what their main thing is, but I'd say always start them in karting because it's a much lower pressure environment than when you move to cars. And I have also seen a few parents who really like racing, so they kind of want their kid to do it more than sometimes the kid does, which it can happen at times, but I feel like the best way to do it would be to do like some indoor karting and see how they enjoy it, and then make the transition to outdoor karting, like owner karts, two strokes, what, four strokes, whatever, and just let them. Just send them out a couple times, like don't pressure them and just let them feel it out and see if they enjoy it, see what their process is, and just kind of watch and take notes. Like, do they enjoy it? What do they need? What do they want out of it?
And the one question I'll ask that is completely personal for me that will get nothing out for anyone else is that I love going go-karting with my mates as well. I love it. And
Oh, yeah.
I don't get to go as often as I'd like to these days with life getting in the way. But when I do, give me a tip. How is the best way to be fast in karts? Like, I know, and I'm talking from a novice point of view, I know I'm far too aggressive on the course. And so I'm just as fast as I can be all the time. And I'm always told, no, carrying more speed through the corners isn't always the best thing. Maybe you've got to brake a bit earlier to be able to exit quicker rather than kind of sliding the car around just as aggressive as possible. So I ask all that, like, make me a better kart driver so I can beat my friends. So when I'm going to just the local kind of kart track, what's the best way to kind of be faster on track with kind of those lower powered type cars karts that you're going to see at those kind of go-kart tracks?
That's a very valid question. For the rental carts, I'd say the best thing is just to be as smooth as you can. Because if you think about it, a cart or most vehicles aren't really designed for multitasking. And each time, say you're turning into the corner and you suddenly have a like you brake really hard at the wrong point, the rear end steps out, you kind of have, and you're correcting it, you're asking the car to do two things at once. You're asking it to go that way. Oh, wait, I want to go that way. So it's not as efficient as it could be. So just be smooth as possible. Like keep your hands kind of like this, like that. You
Short and
don't want to
jolty,
be all,
keep it smoother.
yeah. And especially in rental carts, like I don't know what the ones near you are like, but all the ones I've tried near me, it's make sure you're if it's a corner you have to brake for, like have a big braking zone, make sure you're on throttle by your apex point or a little before, no later.
Okay. Well, hopefully you can help me get a few of those race wins when I'm out there with my mates. So I appreciate
Course.
that.
I think you'll get it. I mean, I could send you a video or two if you want of me just messing around in a rental cart.
Sounds like fun. As I, it kind of just comes to mind, like if we were to just kind of go down to the track, and again, I'm a competitive person, I always have been, like how much difference would there be in just like rental carts? Obviously, going into some sort of race car, it'll be you know, miles difference, but like, how confident are you just to kind of step on track with any kind of Joe Blow that you'll just blow them out of the waters on track? Or is it a little bit closer just because those carts are so low powered, and, or is it because they're so low powered that the actual gap gets bigger because the skill level is that much different?
I'd be pretty confident. Like, granted, in a rental cart, the gaps are always a little smaller because you're just not going as quickly.
Mm.
But there's always going to be a small gap between someone who's really quick in a rental car and someone who maybe enjoys it, but they're not quite there yet. It's going to be smaller, but there almost always will be a gap. Whenever I go rental karting, sometimes on rental karting with one of my teammates last year, and that was pretty fun. Just kind of, it did get a bit chaotic though, because neither of us took it very seriously. Like, we were both pushing pretty hard, but not super serious. So it was entertaining, shall we say, but it was fun.
Absolutely. Well, I wish you nothing but success moving forward, Matt. And, you know, I hope that this is a podcast at the very start of your career. And I'll sit here and say, you know, don't forget us little folk when you're winning championships in Indy, mate. I hope I can give you a call up and maybe we can have another podcast and kind of celebrate your win in championship of IndyCar.
Oh, I'd love that. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it here and it was great to meet you.
I appreciate it, mate. And likewise. And I always like to have finish up our podcast with asking the guest this week a random question that was asked by the guest from last week. And so I don't want you to feel too nervous in your chair. This one's a pretty easy one to answer. So last week's guest asked, what is your favorite pasta?
Ooh. I'd say maybe gnocchi.
Ooh.
Like a bit of like pan-fried gnocchi, that's probably my favorite.
Oh, talking my language, I love it. Yeah, a bit of burnt butter, a bit of sage, a bit of olive oil in some gnocchi. Oh, talking my language, I like it. Good answer.
That's where it's at.
Excellent. Well, appreciate you answering that question, and then I always have to follow it up with just a random question that comes to mind, mate, for next week's guest. What do you got for me?
Probably we could keep it on food. Food's always a good topic.
I agree.
If you could, let's say, like which ethnicity has your favorite food and why?
Has your
favorite... Or not ethnicity, but cuisine.
Yep. Which I'll change that up. Cuisine has your favorite food and why? Love the question, right? I'll always put it in the show notes so people can find it anyway, but just verbally to say, where's the best place for people to follow your journey? And if they want to watch you race, where's the best places to find that out?
That would most likely be Instagram or Facebook. I have a Twitter account as well, but I don't use it quite so much. There's also my website, which if someone doesn't know me, that might be a good place to read a bit. But I'd say social media is definitely the best place.
So just what's your handle on Instagram?
Andre Lafond Racing.
Andre Lafond Racing.
Very Perfect. Original.
Excellent. Well, as I said, I'll put those show notes, all those details in the show notes anyway, so people can click on them and have a find through, mate. But yeah, I wish you luck for the season ahead and then obviously for championships to come. And as I said, I look forward to having a chat in the future when more races come and more wins come and those championships are around the corner. So I wish you nothing but luck, mate.
Thank you so much. It was, again, thank you so much for having me on this podcast. It was a pleasure. It was great to meet you.
Anytime, mate. Likewise. Well, guys, that's been another episode of the Let's Just Talk podcast. I hope you've enjoyed that one. I'll talk to you next week. I love you all. Bye.